Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your Radio Shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 143 for April 16th, 2014. Bob goes to NAB, and we have the new segment, DXing with Valerie. Hello, everybody from Illinois tonight. This is K9EID, Bob Heil, and it's Ham Nation, and I'm glad you tuned in. That's what we do every Wednesday night right here on the Twit Network. Very special show tonight because we have some new people joining us. We have a couple of new segments coming. One of them will be introduced tonight. And we're very excited to bring you even more information about this great hobby. But if you're a regular watcher of the show, you know we really have a lot of problems with timing. So what Gordo and George, Don, and I figured out is to run some of the segments every other week. And that way we'll be able to bring in more segments. So you'll be able to see how this is all going to unfold. But first of all, let's see what's going on with Gordo. How are you doing down there, Gordo?
I am just fine. And we're getting ready to hear Puerto Rico on Amateur Radio World Day. Make that Amateur Radio World Radio Day, April 18th. Good Friday, Puerto Rico, KP4FD, looking for contacts. And, of course, you and I and the entire Twit Ham Nation team, Bob, looking to see everybody at Dayton, May 16, 17, and 18. And then I'll be looking to see everybody up in Nevada at the state convention, May 30, 31, and June 1. So that's the plan. See you there. Back okay. to you, Bob.
All right. Well, we're going to come back in a couple of minutes with the short shots. But before we do that, we want to introduce a new host to this show that's going to be very exciting. We've been looking for somebody for quite a while to handle it, and we chose Tim Duffy's poster child, who happens to be in V9L Valerie. And Valerie, good evening to you, and thanks for joining us here in this crazy mob.
Well, hello, everybody. Glad to be aboard. I get to talk about my two favorite subjects, so I'm really excited.
And those two favorite subjects are?
DXing and contesting.
Well, we know that you you love that, and big antennas. I think Brian's got a picture of where you sit once in a while to check things out. This kind of shows the viewers. She's really... Wow. I like
that's
that.
An antenna.
I mean, if you're going to be a DXer, it's none of these little bitty antennas. That's for 75 meters, isn't it, Val?
Roger that. That's about 135 feet long and 5 7/8 at the center. That's a custom-made rotatable dipole. Not mine, however. Maybe one day.
Oh, golly. Well, we're going to come back to you, and you're going to let us know a lot more. And you're going to teach all of us throughout the future shows about DXing and contesting. And it's really a fun thing. And, you know, we have a lot of computer people that are into gaming. And that's really where we come with amateur radio. It's a tremendous competitive thing. And Valerie's going to tune us into all of that. George, you have any antennas like that? Or have you ever seen any antennas like that?
Not quite that large. I've seen some rotatable 80-meter dipoles before, but they weren't full scale like that one is.
That's
well, Bob,
the real deal. Go ahead.
I found a guy out here on my doorstep showed up this afternoon. He was carrying a radio, so we let him in.
Well, that's a good time to let them in.
Oh, yeah.
What do you got, Ray? What is that?
We brought down the ID-5100. This week, George was supposed to be out in Bellevue with me, but I had a family emergency that I had to take care of. So we're down here in Mississippi, and I decided that we'd come over here, and hopefully tomorrow we'll do some video on that to do a little head-to-head competition.
Yeah, that'll be great. Well, that's a wonderful piece, and we're excited to know much more about it. So see how it all works for you. That'll be great. Well, let's go see what Gordo's got. I know he's always got some interesting things. So, Gordo, let's see what's going on.
All right. Well, we're going to hear what's going on with noise. So, Brian, if you'll get ready with the noise shots. And lightning, you know what lightning sounds like. If you've been on CW... Yeah, you know lightning. It makes that crackle. Listen to it here. Yeah, that was a great lightning strike. Well, the noise we're going to talk about is not going to be lightning or atmospheric, but rather power line noise. And you all know power line noise. Yeah, that annoying power line noise. There's no easy way to resolve power line noise other than digital signal processing and possibly some noise filters that help cancel power line. These little poles that you see right here, these are residential poles. They're usually not too noisy, but it's that former photo that we showed you that really creates a lot of noise. Now, I'm very happy to say that all of the ICOM rigs and many of the other rigs that I have all have digital signal processing. First try noise reduction. If that doesn't work, the DSP, a noise blanker may help, but we'll see how the noise blanker is more effective in just a few minutes. But these are add-on DSP speakers if you should have an old radio without DSP. And DSP is pretty good. Listen to this. We'll add more DSP. There's a whole bunch of DSP. So digital signal processing is a great way to try and reduce the noise. And these little add-on DSP speakers from various manufacturer accessory makers do a nice job if you've got a rig that does not have built-in DSP. Now, if you got a rig that does have built-in DSP, don't try and use them both in that usually the rig's own DSP is going to be the one that's going to win out. But if you don't have a rig with DSP, this one's by BHI, also West Mountain Radio and several others, good DSP circuits for helping minimize power line noise. Now, this particular meter, no. We've had very few noise complaints come out of any of the regular power meters that you have hanging on the side of your house. But this one right here, oh yeah, CFLs and LEDs. Take a listen to this noise. On, off, on, off. Oh yeah, they are noisy. So if you've got CFLs or the new LEDs, check them out. They seem to create more problems up on the higher bands than they do down on the 40-meter band. Well, solar panels, yeah, you got to have enough solar panels. That's certainly one that's going to put out about 2 amps. That'll be great at field day. Here's the one we use at Quartz Fest. That does about 5 to 6 amps. And it's not the solar panel itself that gives off the noise, but rather it is the controller that controls the solar panel with the regulator and all of that stuff. And sometimes they can make some pretty interesting noise. Take a listen to this. Yeah, that was my neighbor's solar panel setup, and it was pretty darn noisy. Now, some of these maintenance chargers also create a great deal of noise, and the maintenance chargers, they actually pulse the signal, and it is a way of knocking off the buildup on battery plates. And if you were to look at it on a scope, here's what you would see. So if you hear a pulsing sound, That's likely coming from some of these battery chargers. So lots of things that can make noise on A2. Hear this? That was Patrick, KF6 PFW. By the way, Patrick did the great photos last week. And we discovered this noisemaker that completely clobbered his 40-meter band. So, Patrick, I'm glad we unplugged it. We could actually see it on a scope. And if you've got a portable little radio with a scope on it, you'll see what comes out of some of these wall chargers that are quite noisy. Now, if you do ATV, slow scan television, or some of those modes, you'll actually see the noise come up as bands of interference. And here you see on what appears to be a weather facsimile that I turned on and turned off a noisemaker in the house. So the way to tell whether or not you've got the noise, and Patrick was hesitant to do this, but I said, Patrick, we gotta shut off the panel. Oh no, anything but shutting off the panel. So before you shut off the panel, make sure that your rig that you're going to detect noise in your shack is run on a battery so you know that it's still on the air. And then go over to the panel with your shortwave receiver or battery-operated radio and shut off the panel. And it'll even work on the AM broadcast band. You can hear. And when you shut off the panel, if all of a sudden the noise disappears throughout the house, and then you turn the panel back on, you have likely found your noise source. And of course, now it's the job of sniffing out the noise. Any little AM radio will do, not on FM, but on AM. And we'll go ahead and first try the fax machine. It was pretty quiet. I tuned to WWV on 10 megs to find the noise overcoming it. And then here it was. The washer was turned on, and here's the noise that we picked up from our trusty everyday washing machine. Can you imagine that noise coming out of the washing machine? Well, it was when it was turned on and going through its cycle. And we confirmed it. We held a shortwave receiver tuned to WWV so we could hear the noise and hear the station. As soon as I got near the washing machine, it made a noise when the washing machine was actually running. When the washing machine was turned off, it was relatively quiet. Oh, here's a killer. Valerie, may you have no dimmer switches in your QTH. And dimmer switches are killers. Let's turn on. Hear that? Is a dimmer switch at its very worst. So keep your dimmers all the way off, sometimes all the way on, and the noise goes away. But in the middle, dimming, those pulses will kill HF reception. All right, now let's take a look at a Part 15 device. That's usually a whistle that we'll hear shortly. So if you have anything that's Part 15, like weather stations, and you do UHF on 432 megahertz, weather stations are on 433. They can create quite a problem. The thermostat. Sometimes the mechanical ones don't create noise, but those with a microprocessor, yep, they can be noisy. So I went back there. If you got a microprocessor, you're going to hear some interesting things coming over. This was a pulsing microprocessor. I thought it was maybe something on the air. We turned everything off on this person's house. The noise went away, and we finally traced it to one of the new modern thermostats. And take a look. That's what we have, and that's where the noise was coming from. Oh, yeah, you can put filters on all sorts of wires, but that does not necessarily mean you're going to cure the problem. You need to pinpoint the problem either with a little direction finder or a little shortwave radio, and you'll be able to then correct it, usually by cutting the power from that device and giving it away or giving it to someone else. Again, these help, but they're not going to necessarily cure the thing. The big deal is unplug the noisemaker when you're working good long-range DX. And that will create all sorts of nice things and minimal problems. Well, when we go mobile, this is the noise that we've got to contend with. Good old spark plug noise. And And if your mobile has some pretty hairy wiring like this, or it's got a noisy alternator or generator, sometimes digital signal processing can help. On the ICOM radios, on my 706 and 7000, I found that the noise blanker does a wonderful job, as we see here, in eliminating that noise coming out of the vehicle. And again, this noise coming out of the alternator or generator sounds like this. And sometimes a noise filter like this will help cure that problem. So I hope all of you have a good opportunity to help stop that noise, run good shielded coax. I like the coax from DX Engineering because it has a double shield on it, one of the types that they sell, and that helps minimize noise creeping into your ham shack. And above all, if you got a great radio, much like the ICOM 9100 that I run here for weak signal work as well as HF, you'll find that the built-in noise blankers will do a great job. And that way you can tune into a pileup like we hear here. And you'll be able to work the pileups and hear those stations. So cure the noise at the source. Usually the best bet is pulling the plug. And one of my most favorite for 75 meter and 160 meter is a radio direction finder. And the little RDF works just great and helped me track down the noise. So be a sleuth, find the noise. Don't try and mask it with all sorts of add-ons, but rather unplug the noise and you'll be ready to roll and work DX. Bob, back to you with no noise.
Gordo, that was fabulous, and I imagine it took you a long time to do that. That was terrific, and I'm sure everybody learned something. I know I did, so that's great. Before we move on, I wanted to let everybody know, I don't think I have to introduce her because she's been with us a long time, but Amanda, K1DDN, is going to join us every week. And she'll be back here in just a little bit live, and we'll talk about this more. But she's going to be looking over the chat room, and she also has some other segments that her and Jeff are putting together. And we are very excited to have her here full time because this is a big job and an important job. So all of the chat room, let us have your questions. She'll be back, and that's the other thing. It won't be at the end. She'll be right after George here in about another 20 minutes. So get your questions fired into Amanda over on the chat room, and we'll see her here back in just a little bit. And maybe we'll be able to answer things, and maybe we won't, but we'll try. Oh, golly. Well, let's move over and see what ICOM has for us. And I think George has a really nice video. So take her away, George. All about ICOM.
Last year, ICOM introduced the IC7100 touchscreen mobile to rave reviews. Now, ICOM's doing it again, taking innovation and mobility to the next level. This time, they're announcing the new ID5100A, a VHF-UHF dual-band digital transceiver. ICOM's mobile radio features a large responsive 5.5-inch touchscreen with software keypad and independent main dials, volume, and squelch for A and B bands. The ID5100A also includes an integrated GPS receiver, position, course, speed, and altitude are displayed. The GPS antenna is located in the remote head, so no external GPS antenna is required. And there's a great DV and FM analog repeater list function that uses the GPS position info to display repeaters near you. The dual-band receiver offers VHF-UHF, VHF-VHF, and UHF-UHF simultaneous receive capabilities. Digital functions include D-Star DV mode operation, dual-watch receivers, D-plus reflector linking, and enhanced DPRS. An optional Bluetooth unit supports headsets for hands-free communications. And there's the free RSMS-1A Android app available for download on Google Play that offers a number of useful remote features. The ID5100A has 50 watts output power for both VHF and UHF, an SD card slot for recording and playing back QSOs, CS5100 cloning software, and much more. more. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's ID5100A D-Star Mobile.
And you can tune in to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation and register to win weekly prizes out of the swag giveaway from the ICOMSwagStore.com. But if you win in there, you're automatically registered to win the grand prize of the month. And, Ray, what do you say we give away this radio right here?
Oh, we're not getting rid of my radio, but there will be one that we'll give away.
Okay. Yeah, ICOM's giving away ID5100A, the new Billa watch with 50 watts of power on both VHF, UHF, touchscreen, D-Star built-in GPS, SD card storage, an Android remote control that Ray's got in his hand right here. Just a little.
Which way,
yeah. Whichever way you there can see. Yeah, the lights in here glare out the screen. It's really a lot brighter than what you're seeing here. But he also had a neat little Bluetooth thing he was talking on a while ago, too.
Yeah, if this building wasn't surrounded by metal, we'd be able to control it in the car.
Yeah, we're kind of in a Faraday cage here. But I like a Faraday cage. It keeps the noise out. But anyway, go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this episode of Ham Nation and every episode and register to win. And right now, their chances are still pretty good. If they register, they could win.
Oh, yeah, there's
this.
A couple more weeks to get in there for that drawing. So send them in. I do read each and every one of them and try to give some good information when there's questions in there that we haven't covered either on a show or upcoming episode.
Yeah, well, thanks, Ray, and thanks for sponsoring Ham Nation. Bob, you've been out of town. You were gone last week. Did you bring us back any goodies to look at?
I couldn't carry them because I only had one arm, but I brought some really interesting video. I remember this is shot with one arm last week, so let's roll it. This is about the NAB 2014, the National Association of Broadcasters. And you see everything there from full-blown studios. This was amazing. Helicopters, drone helicopters. They have real helicopters in the booth. You can buy a helicopter for your TV station. Of course, they have a lot of microphones, all kinds of microphones, and a lot more microphones. And you get to pick out tubes, big tubes. And the iMac has some really good ones. And, of course, there's just a whole assortment of all kinds of headphones and more of the studios complete. And these are all working. But at 6 o'clock at the close of the show, every year, this is what happens. This starts about 2 hours before 6 o'clock. These guys line up, guys and gals. These are people that mostly are ham radio operators, but they are also technicians. They are studio owners. They are television station owners. Every genre in the broadcast industry. And these people line up to attend the ham radio reception that Sarah and I have been doing this for about, I think, 8 years now. But we are now joined by DX Engineering and BSW. And look, it turns a corner and goes down another hall. Oh, it's just amazing. Now, this is before we opened the doors. Why are all of these people standing there? What are they waiting for hours? Well, by the way, there's a guy with a new high cap. I don't know where he got that, but that was cool. They get in the door, and here's what's happening. Free food. We give free drinks. And it starts filling up. And as it fills up, what's really cool, hey, there's Mrs. Ray. What's really cool is the networking that goes on. You'll see right there, they're exchanging cards and addresses. And I think that's the greatest part of this whole thing is the networking. There's W1LSB. He's been on the show a couple of times. He did the history of single sideband. Great friend of ours. There's Scott Wilkinson. He's the home theater host here on Twit TV. And those are the kind of people that show up. And here's Don, WB5EKU. He came in early, and we gave him a table out in the middle, and he set up a hotspot, worked all kinds of people. Here we are starting to fill the room up. That's about a third of it right there. But then here comes John Marino. And John starts giving away prizes. This year, he gave away over $16,000 worth of prizes, a lot of radios, tubes, speakers, headphones, you name it, microphones. There's DF1SP, and he won one of the MFJ antenna analyzers. And here's Vittorio from Rome, Italy. And we have people from all over the world show up at NAB. And we had a good time talking to him, IK8RJJ. And so many of these guys are there really for the networking. But I was supposed to be there all 3 days. But as you guys know, I had my surgery. So they had already printed this catalog. This went out. If you didn't get one of these, you should call at BSW and get their new catalog. Not for my picture on the front, but they have specials. So what did they do for 2 days? They made a lifetime, a life-size cardboard cutout of me, put it in their booth, and they had all kinds of people coming by taking pictures with it. How silly. But I got there on the third day. And here we are. I got to take my own picture with myself. So it was a fun time. Really great. I saw so many people at the show that day. But then that night, Tim Schweiger, who owns BSW, myself and Sarah, he brings the cardboard figure over and they set it at one of the tables. So I don't know if that was a ploy to get some more tickets or what. But it was sponsored by BSW, by DX Engineering, and by Heil Sound and Turner Engineering. So we had a great time at NAB. I always do because we see so many of our ham friends, and I cannot tell you how many people came up and tell us that they watch Ham Nation. And these are network people. So I guess a few people are watching us, and I'm so thrilled about that. And before we get over to Valerie's DX piece tonight, I want to mention one thing. You guys and gals need to go to our website. I very seldom talk about this, but this in the next 2 weeks, they're giving away a PR40, and it's going to be real easy. It's a podcast contest, but all you got to do is go to Heil Sound. And, of course, there again, it's just heilsound.com/pro. But when Heil Sound Pro opens up, the pro page, not the Hammond Radio page, you'll see a beautiful picture of Leo Laporte. You click on that, and that'll put you into the whole deal to sign up. And somebody's going to win a PR40. I hope it's somebody from Ham Nation. That would really be cool. So go check that out, and you'll win a PR40. And be sure that the chat room, while Valerie's on, I want you to get some questions to Amanda, and she'll be on in just a while and see what we can do to answer some of that. So without further ado, here comes Amanda. Valerie, I'm okay, NV9L, and she's going to try over the next year to try to figure out how we can get some of the contest and DX stuff into our head. And it's the poster child for Contest University. That's what Tim says about you, Valerie, and we know that because you are very special in the DX world, and we're happy to have you here. Thanks a lot. So it's all yours.
Well, thanks, Bob. I'm going to have to get to NAB now that I'm in broadcasting, maybe win some prizes and get some free food. It looks like a lot of fun out there. You know, when I was trying to decide what to do for my first segment for DXing and contesting, I came up with what I think is the most important thing that everybody should know before they start DXing. And that's the DX Code of Conduct. Anybody that's been out there DXing, it's pretty evident to hear that the pileups have gotten out of control, and it just seems to be getting worse. Sideband is notoriously the worst for that. So what I'm going to do is show you my own video of noise, Gordo, not to be outdone, and it's a little bit different. This is what happened when a gentleman, an operator in Iran, called CQ on 15-meter sideband, and rather than have you just staring at a radio, I decided to overlay some video on top of this pileup, this unruly pileup, with what it kind of reminded me of. So play the video, Brian. Thanks. Germany. So I don't know if you could kind of pick out what was going on there, but there was a lot of wrong going on in that pileup. So without further ado, let's kind of get into the DX code of conduct here, just so everybody can kind of know what it's about. First off, the first rule is to listen again before calling. That's actually a good rule of thumb for anything in amateur radio, is always to listen. The next one would be only call if you can copy the DX station properly. If you can't hear him, you shouldn't be calling in case he does come back to your call. And if you can't hear him, just be patient. Propagation will change, and hopefully you'll get to hear him shortly. I will not trust the DX cluster and will be sure of the DX station's call sign before calling. Now, if you're doing number one, which is listen and listen and listen again, you're going to know it's the DX station. So these kind of go hand in hand. I will not interfere with the DX station nor anyone calling and will not tune up on the DX frequency. This is becoming really common out there. I don't know if it's just people being lazy or inconsiderate or a little bit of both, but please tune up somewhere else, tune up into a dummy load, tune up on low power. If somebody accidentally calls when the guy is running split, please don't transmit and tell them to move. The operator will tell them that when they say they're listening up. And so if you listen, you will know that they're listening up or running split. The next one is, I will wait for the DX station to end a contact before I call. A lot of people try and beat out everybody on the next one, and that station may need to go back to that call, the other operator. He may be missing part of the call sign, or the QSO is not over. So please just wait until the QSO is over. I will always send my full call sign. I'm sure you heard in that clip a few people just giving part of their call sign. It causes you to do three back and forths before you get a call sign. You're just better off doing the entire call sign the first time through, and hopefully he can come back with that full call sign right away. I will call and then listen for a reasonable interval, and I will not continuously call. I'm sure we've all heard this going on all the time, too, is in that audio I played, as well as in a live DX pileup going on probably right now. I've heard some people just keep giving their call sign over and over again. They've actually missed the DX operator coming back to them because they were too busy just giving their call sign over and over and over again. So just give it once. That's the general rule of thumb. I will not transmit when the DX operator calls another call sign that's not mine. If he's calling somebody else, please don't come back to him. Let them do their cue and just be patient. I will not transmit when the DX operator queries a call sign that's not like mine. So say he's asking for the Foxtrot 5, we shouldn't be hearing the Delta Lima 2 come back to that call sign. Things like this just make it that much longer for that guy to get that QSO in. And, you know, the goal here is to have everybody get worked and get everybody in the log. And so things like that just make this take so much longer than it needs to be. I will not transmit when the DX station requests geographic areas other than mine. So if they're looking for Oceania or Asia only, please stand by. They'll come back to North America. The sooner everybody stands by and they can work those guys, the sooner they'll get back to North America or Europe or wherever you are. So when they're asking for Nine-Landers only, just let the Nine-Landers go and they'll get to you. And when the DX operator calls me, if they got my call sign right, I'm not going to repeat it back to him. That could actually, not only does it add time to the QSO, it could cause confusion. If he says November Victor 9 Lima, you're 5-9, I'm not going to say this is November Victor 9 Lima, you're also 5-9. He might now think, oh, is it November Whiskey 9 Lima? Did I get it wrong? So please, if they get your call sign right, don't come back to them with your call sign. Just give them a 5-9. The important thing here is to let them keep their rhythm. When you get a rhythm, you're going to get more people in the log a lot faster. I will be thankful for if and when I do make a contact. I mean, some of these guys that are in these countries hate to run these pileups because they get so out of hand and unruly. So we need to be respectful of that. Also, some of these de-expeditions, these guys have spent so much time and money to get it to the other side of that to get on the other end of that pileup. And we need to be thankful when we do get a contact. And lastly, I will respect my fellow hams and conduct myself so as to earn their respect. I mean, you're out there giving your call sign. I mean, I have a little list of people I hear in those pileups that have bad behavior. I mean, you're representing yourself. You want to make sure you represent yourself well. And I think with that'll go a long way in helping to control these pileups. Now, I also have a URL right there. If you guys want to go there, you can upload the DX Code of Conduct, put it on your QRZ page, put it on your web page. Try and help spread the word as much as you can. And hopefully we can get these pileups a little bit better under control. And if you want, you can go to my QRZ page. At the very bottom of mine, I have the DX Code of Conduct logo. If you click on that, I have embedded the URL underneath the picture so you can get right to the DX Code of Conduct. Now that you've learned the DX Code of Conduct, you can go out and you can start working some DX. I'm going to just give you some live DX that's going on right now. Not too much going on. We got Sierra Oscar 1 Alpha. That's Western Sahara. He's going to be on the air in about a week or so. Bangladesh, Sierra 21 Romeo, he may be on the air in about 2 weeks. He is waiting on a rotor. As soon as he gets that and gets it installed, you should hear Bangladesh out there. Mauritania is going to be out this weekend. 5 Tango 1 Mike. They're going to be on the air for the CQMM contest, which is the Manchester NERA All-America CW contest. This is a contest that originally started as Brazil only, and then it became South America only, and now it's all of the Americas. So if you want to get out there and brush up on your CW, it's going to be CW 80 through 10 meters this weekend. There's also a bunch of CUSO parties going on this weekend. We got Nebraska, Michigan, North Dakota, and Ontario. Those are actually another excellent place where you can brush up on your CW, especially if it's really slow like mine. A lot of times these guys are calling CQ with no takers, so they'll be a little more patient and work a slow CW operators to get us in the log. There's also a bunch of other contests going out there, China DX contest. There's a Holy Land DX contest. But if you ever want to know what's going on in the contesting world, you can go to contesting.com. Whiskey Alpha 7 Bravo November Mike keeps a contest calendar that they host on their site. I also have a link to that on my QRZ page. You can click that, and at any time you can see what contests are going on. It's a fabulous source of contests. Speaking of contests, I talked to Tim Duffy today. The seats are filling up really fast at Contest U. I actually have one of them. I signed up today. So if you're thinking about going to Contest University at Dayton that Thursday, you better get on and sign up pretty quickly, because those are filling up fast. If you have signed up, or maybe you're still on the fence about signing up, there is going to be a free webinar this Sunday night at, I can't remember the time, but I have the link for both Contest U and for this webinar this Sunday on my QRZ page. But it's a Sunday night, it's going to be a webinar, and he's going to kind of go over what to expect if you go to Contest University at Dayton. Also, those 4 days at Dayton, all the contesting socializing aspects, or what the haps are for the contesters there. There's a lot of fun stuff going on. There's the super suite with the free pizza and a contest dinner. And I know my contest club hosts a party suite that's free, or, you know, open for anybody to show up. We all bring local microbrews from the Nine Land area, which, if you know, the Midwest is pretty well known for good beer. I know I'm bringing a kegger of some beer from Lake Geneva. So there's all kinds of fun stuff there to find out about, well, as well, on this Contest University webinar that he's going to have this Sunday night. And that's free. Just go to contestuniversity.com. You can sign up for either one there, or both, or you can go to my QRZ. And they're there. And that's about all I have for DX and contesting news. I'll see you guys in a couple weeks. George, what you got cooking over there?
Well, thanks, Val. I have some great information there on contesting and DXing. Ray, have you got anything you can add to that list of code of conduct there? I know you've got a little experience in that area.
It was one of the funny things that she said on there about listening for your call and that. When I was working on the CD2 DX expedition from Mozambique, we were trying to work U.S., and I heard a Kilo 5, and try to get the kilo five again. And then all of a sudden I hear Italy kilo five. And the guy gave the rest of his call, so he was trying to get in the log by representing as a kilo five. So I agree with you, Val. The DX code of conduct. Conduct. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Code of conduct is real helpful, especially when you're on a de-expedition and you're trying to get a lot of people in the log.
Yeah. I have never been on a de-expedition. Hopefully one day maybe I'll get to go on one. I've worked a few, though, and boy, it's kind of fun, you know, to try to work them on all the different bands, all the different modes. And
you don't have to travel far to have a fun pileup. I did one a few years back on East Ship Island, Mississippi. So the Iotas are good ones. That's a great weekend trip, or we just drove down there and did that one.
Yeah, cool. Well, this week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to do something a little bit different. You know, as hams, we're kind of expected, or we like to be, kind of on the cutting edge of technology, and sometimes we're not. Some of us like to run old tube amplifiers and stuff like that, and run homemade gear, but it's good to kind of know what's out there and what the possibilities are. So I put together a little video this week just showing what you might do with a microcontroller.
Amateur radio operators are required to identify every 10 minutes while they're operating on the air, so that led to this week's project idea. In the old days, if your timing wasn't that good, you might have used something like an egg timer or a thermal time delay relay. Later, with the advent of the 555 timer chip, you could build your own timer easy enough. It did require a number of components. Today, I thought I'd take a look at a more modern way of doing this using an Arduino microcontroller. Very few components are needed for this. You'll need a speaker. One of our speaker leads connects here to ground, and the other one connects to digital I.O. pin 13. We've got a push-button switch. One side of it connects to a ground terminal, and the other side goes through this jumper lead and makes its way to digital I.O. pin number 8 here. And then we've got a 10K ohm pull-up resistor that connects to 5 volts on the other side. Now all we need to do is write a simple little program to act as a timer and use the push-button to reset it. Let's take a look at our Arduino sketch. To begin with, these top lines are comments here. Right here is a comment line. These two forward slashes mean everything after that is ignored. And up at the top here, we're going to set some program parameters. The first one is a long, which means it's just a large number. We're giving it a name of ID interval, and we're saying that will be equal to 570,000. This value is in milliseconds. So I set it for 9.5 minutes, and that's 570,000 milliseconds. But for our example here, let's change this to a lower number. We'll just set it for 10 seconds, which is 10,000. The next line is an integer. We're naming it repeat length, and we're setting that to equal 1 second or 1,000 milliseconds. The next line is an integer speaker pin. And we're setting that for pin 13 of the digital I.O. pins on the Arduino. The next line is an integer restart pin will equal 8. That's where we're going to hook our push button switch. Next, we've got a Boolean value here. Button state will be its name, and we're setting that to false, which means the button is not pressed. Next is the setup of the program. We've got two commands in here. Both are called pin mode. We're setting speaker pin, which we say is 13, to be an output, and restart pin, which is number 8, to be an input for our push button. The next portion of the sketch here is the loop. This just continues over and over as long as the Arduino is powered up. The first thing we're going to do is set the speaker to no tone. So we send the no tone command to speaker pin, which is pin 13 where our speaker was connected, and then we're going to delay for ID interval, and we had set that to 10,000, so that means 10 seconds. Now the next line here, alert loop with a colon, just means this is a label or a marker point in the sketch. After the 10-second delay interval has expired, we'll come down to this tone statement, and we'll play a 300 hertz tone for 100 milliseconds, and then we have to delay for 100 milliseconds to let that tone complete before continuing on. Next, we'll play a tone of 200 hertz for 100 milliseconds.
Then we'll check the state of the button. We'll do a digital read to restart pin, which is pin 8 where our push button is connected, and we'll assign that value to button state. If button state is high, that means the button's not pressed. We'll delay for repeat length, and we had set repeat length to be 1 second or 1,000 milliseconds, and then we'll go to alert loop back up to here. So once we've gotten to this stage in the code, we're just going to sit here and loop over and over up to alert loop and back down to this go-to statement until the button is pressed. So if the button's pressed, it's going to go low, which means we would go to this else statement. This will play a tone of 100 hertz for 100 milliseconds, and we've got the delay there, so it has a chance to play the tone. The reason I put a tone statement here is it's just a different sounding tone and lets me know that my button press was acknowledged. Once this has occurred, we loop back up to the top of loop here, turn the tone off, wait again for whatever ID interval we had set, and then just repeat over and over. So we just continue to do this as long as the Arduino is running. Every time the tone sounds, we can press a button, and it'll be reset for another ID length, which I would probably use 9.5 minutes. So that's it. Very simple code here. Now let's upload it into the Arduino. We plug the Arduino into a USB port on the computer. We assign the serial port, which this one happens to be on COM4, and we press the upload button. We can see the status of what's going on down here. It's compiled the sketch and uploaded it to the Arduino, and it's done. Once the program's uploaded, we can run the Arduino off of the USB port here, or we can just simply run it off a battery. After our ID interval has expired, which is about 10 seconds, we should start hearing the beeps. We can press the reset button, and it starts timing all over again. If you'd like to download this code, you can get it at this link right here. There you go. Just a simple little thing that you can do with the Arduino microcontroller. You know, you could build this up with a 555, but, you know, you'd need a few components and a little bit of time, but something like this right here you could throw together quickly. Now, you know, around $29, I think, for the Arduino Uno, maybe a little bit cheaper in some places. It's a lot more expensive than a 555. But you can just throw together things real quick, use them for the length period you want, and then repurpose it and do something else later. Well, last week I asked in the contest, what did I ask? I don't remember. Oh, yeah. L.B. Sebeck wrote a column for the Colorado QRP Club. What was the name of that column? And our winner, and this is an appropriate name for a winner, Joe Ham, KC1BAQ. And Joe said the answer to your question, Sebeck's column was the Colorado QRP Radio Club's publication. It was called Lowdown, and that's correct. So congratulations, Joe. You're going to win a copy of Sebeck's book here, Antennas from the Ground Up, Volume 1. I don't know if there was a Volume 2 of this book or not. I'll have to check with the MFJ and see if there was. But anyway, congratulations for next week. If you'd like to win something, I've got this nice diamond antenna right here. It's the SRH77CA. It's for your handy talkie. Ray says it makes a nice crop, too, and we've been keeping him in line with this. This one's got a male SMA connector on it. It's for your handy talkie, and it'll give you a lot more gain than the standard rubber duck that comes with your handy talkie. If you'd like to win that, then answer this question. How often must broadcast stations ID, and what's required of a broadcast station when they ID that's not required of a ham? If you think you know the answer to that, send me the answer to hamnationcontests@gmail.com, and you could win. And one thing I want to mention before we move on, we just put out a new amateur logic this week, and we had Randy Hall, K7AGE of YouTube fame, join us. And you might want to check that out and see what Randy's been up to. And also, Tommy played with some nice solar panels, the ones that we see in Dayton, the power film ones that roll up like the military uses. Tommy had a lot of fun with that and a lot more in there, too. So check that out at amateurlogic.tv. And right now, I think we're going to bring in Amanda and see what's been going on in the chat room tonight. Amanda?
Good evening, George. So happy to be here tonight. And don't let Ray walk away, because I do have a question for him and his new IC5100. So is he still around?
Yeah, he is. He's going to slide back in, so you'll get him in a moment.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you, Ray, for jumping in there. I appreciate it. So one of the first questions I have, and I'm not sure who to direct this one at. One of you guys will step in and take it. But I have a question from W4BKB. What should you ultimately look for to make sure you're not buying a problematic radio, a used radio, that is?
Hey, Gordo, you want to answer that one?
Yeah, well, you know, with used radios, I always examine the receiver. Make sure I've got a good hot receiver, because what occurs sometimes on used radios, it has a lot of relays in them. The relays sometimes need to be exercised to get them cleaned up. But if the radio was accidentally transmitted into, it takes out the first or second RF stage. So on a used radio, tune to WWV or go to 20 or 40 meters and make sure that you've got 3 to 5 S units of noise coming in and other signals. That's the first thing I look for. And then, of course, I transmit in a dummy load. But usually output transistors are pretty tough. It's the receiver that I always like to listen to.
Great information there, Gordo. Thank you so much. And nice to see you tonight, by the way, too. And, oh, you guys, by the way, I have so many more questions for Val. They have a lot of questions about DX stuff. So I'm going to, Val and I worked that out. I'm going to send her a few by email, and she can hopefully answer those next week for you. So the next question, let's go back to Ray. So I'll move into place there. Somebody had asked, is your touchscreen resistive or capacitive?
Now, the touchscreen on both the 5100 and the 7100 are resistive, so I haven't seen any issues with anybody being able to use them or control the radios.
Great. Thank you so much, Ray. So nice to see you, too. I've never been on the show with you. Okay. Next question we've got, you guys. Gordo, let's go back to you. What type of connectors do you use?
What type of connectors do I use? Well, if it's for DC, I use the Anderson connectors, but I regularly work them, because if you leave an Anderson connector plugged in all the time, it gets it develops a little bit of resistance. So for DC, the Anderson connectors. For microphones, I'm very cautious to always go with Bob's suggestion for the right mic to the right radio. And let's see, for UHF, I use IN connectors. So hopefully, Amanda, I answered that question correctly. Over.
Yay.
Okay, and you guys, I should be in the right direction now. Darn Skype. With me. I'm so sorry, you guys. It always causes for some good conversation, though. Appreciate
Absolutely.
That. Okay, I have one more question, and I bet George would like to take this one, because George likes to talk about some antennas. George, and I'm sure this varies on a lot of things, but WB3HBX asks, in the U.S., what direction is best to profile a dipole antenna?
Oh, it depends on where you live, I think. Down here in the South, if I'm wanting to talk to Europe, then I want to try to make it sort of toward the east. If I'm not interested in talking that direction and I want to talk in the United States and South America, I need to orientate it north and south. So just depends on where you are. If you're on the East Coast, you're in a pretty good position there, point it east and west, and then you've got Europe and you've got over to California. It really depends on your antenna, too. You know, they're not, maybe a beam, you know, is going to be pretty directional. Your dipoles are not quite as directional, so you'll do pretty good with them however you put them up. But the best thing to do would be to put up two of them like Bob did, and run you a set of phase dipoles there, and then you can put them whichever direction you want.
Very good. I hope that answered your question there, WB3HBX. Appreciate that, George. For now, that's about all I have. I'm going to be staying tuned to the rest of the chat tonight, and we might come back at the end of the show here and have some more questions for you guys. So with that, I guess I will send it to you, Bob. Thanks, everyone.
Oh, great job. Great job, and we appreciate you being here, and you'll be here every week, and we'll continue on. And the thing is that keep the questions coming, because she'll come back in next week and answer them too. So that'll keep us all on our toes and returning. Good job, and thanks, Jeff, there for helping you. So we're going to go listen to a wonderful piece of video that Don did that's going to tell us all about DX engineering. Let her roll, Don.
Man, we got a good show tonight. Let me talk about something nice here. DX engineering and listening. All the transmitting power in the world is not going to help you if you can't actually hear who it is you're trying to contact. And answering the call for hams looking for serious receive improvements is DX engineering with the NCC1 Receive Antenna Variable Phasing Controller. That is a fancy way of saying that you combine two identical receive antennas to create a virtual rotator directional setup. It's all rotated with phasing. You don't move anything physically. It's completely adjustable. You change the pattern as if you were actually moving the antennas, but they don't move. That means unwanted noise can be nulled out. Desired signals can be peaked and enhanced. You can even kill QRM from unwanted signals, and it combats all types of directional noise. Gives you four main advantages. You electronically steer your receive direction without actually moving your antennas. You compensate for a less than ideal antenna setup, which means you get directional array features regardless of your landscape. It's good stuff. DXEngineering.com has all of the details. And while you're there at DXEngineering.com, I want you to go to DXEngineering.com/hamnation. Grab any of the gear. Get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern. If it's in stock, DX Engineering will put it on a truck headed your way tonight. Proven products, expert advice, the fastest shipping in the industry. DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. Look at this catalog right here. I love this catalog. I mean, it's more than just parts and stuff. There's good information in here. Go to DXEngineering.com and request your catalog or order online. Now, I got a box in the mail the other day. Look at this. This is a nice, heavy box. Yeah, came from DX Engineering. And my stuff was wrapped up in this serious shrink wrap, okay? This is serious bubble wrap, people. I'm talking, what was in my box? It wasn't anything technical. It was a pen and a notepad. We're talking shack aids here. Comfortable shack is a happy ham. A note cube and a mouse pad. Everything you need to dress up your shack is available at DX Engineering. And this is a nice mouse pad. This thing is so slick. It's almost, look at that, white. It almost looks like a hockey rink. It's like a hockey rink for your mouse. In fact, I almost hip-checked my coffee mug right off the desk. Speaking of coffee mugs, they got that too. DXEngineering.com/hamnation. Thank you, DX Engineering. Man, it makes my coffee taste even better. You know, while I'm finishing this, why don't we get you caught up with the news of the week with Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1913, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, April 16, 2014. The ARRL reports that Amateur Radio developed software is assisting in the search for the missing Malaysian air flight MH370, Skeeternash N5ASH.
U.S. Navy personnel involved in the search are using the signal processing and analysis package called Spectrum Laboratory, developed by Wolf Boischer, DL4YHF, to analyze the recently detected 37.5 kilohertz pings that may be coming from the plane's black box voice and data recorders. Very low frequency experimenter Warren Ziegler, K2ORS, told the ARRL that this is the same software package recently used by ham radio experimenters to detect transatlantic signals on 29 kilohertz.
You'll find a link to a detailed story about how this software is being used in the hunt for the missing airliner in the printed edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. The long-awaited VK9MT Mellish Reef D expedition was forced to go QRT April 4th due to a lack of cooperation by Mother Nature.
The team was planning to operate from Mellish Reef until April 9th, but an update sent out by Gene Spinelli, K5GS, on April 5th said that due to the ever-worsening weather associated with an impending tropical storm, they had decided, in the interest of safety, to end the operation early. The time spent on Mellish Reef had been rough for the VK9MT team. Storms hampered their operation, and they were on the verge of leaving at any time. The weather was described as being extremely windy, with occasional heavy rain causing the antennas to take a severe beating. The operating tents were shaking and very noisy, making it difficult for the operators to discern call signs of those trying to make contact.
In just 4 short weeks, radio amateurs from all over the globe will descend on Dayton, Ohio for Hamvention, the world's largest ham fest. Skeeter Nash has a sneak peek at some Hamvention-related happenings.
What's being termed as the ultimate D-Star training class returns to Dayton Hamvention for the third year. This to provide an introduction to D-Star for new users getting on the air and more advanced information for experienced D-Star users. Called D-Star InfoCon 2014, the three-hour class will be held at the Drury Inn in the heart of Hotel Row, not far from the Hera Arena. This year's topics will include using the DR mode, using a Raspberry Pi with a DVAP, updating repeater lists for DR mode, using DRATs for data, and much more. The new ICOM ID5100A will be demonstrated, and all registered participants are eligible to win an ID51A dual-band D-Star handheld that will be given away during the class. The cost of the class is $15 and includes all course material. Pre-registration is required and seating is limited. Registration information can be found at www.dstarinfo.com. The popular 4 days in May QRP gathering is slated for Wednesday, May 14th through Sunday, May 18th. Timed to coincide with the Dayton Hamvention, this year's gathering of low-power enthusiasts and builders will be held at the Holiday Inn in Fairborn, Ohio, just east of the Air Force Museum. Events scheduled so far include numerous seminars related to low-power operation. There will also be a presentation by Tentec, a Meet the Speakers gathering, QRP Club Night, a homebrew competition, and, of course, the famed 4 Days in May Build-A-Thon. Registrants will be eligible to win one of 4 Tentec transceivers that will be drawn for during some of the seminar sessions. Still with Hamvention-related news, we here at Amateur Radio Newsline will again be hosting the annual Ham Radio Town Meeting. This year, in keeping with the overall Maker Renaissance theme of the 2014 Dayton Hamvention, and also its association with the 100th anniversary of our national society, the American Radio Relay League, this year's Ham Radio Town Meeting will present the history of ham radio as told in film and video. Through the magic of preserved promotional films, documentaries, and videos, with some dating back a half century or more, this session will be a nostalgic trip through time. It will also show you ham radio as it was in the past and how we hams, as the first true makers, helped mature all forms of telecommunications to what we have today. The session will also show the important role played by the ARRL in its nurturing, maturing, and protecting the amateur radio service. We also hope to have some of those involved in the production of these films and videos on hand to answer any questions you might have. As a side benefit, the session will also give you a place to take a break, sit down for a while, and be entertained by our hobby's glorious past. So please join us on Saturday, May 17th from 1:45 through 3 p.m. Eastern Time in Hera Arena Meeting Room 5 for the history of ham radio as told in film and video. We hope to see some of you there.
Hamvention is May 16th through 18th at Hera Arena, and of course, Ham Nation will be there, and we hope you'll be there too. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for over 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
All righty, Mr. Don. Always a great job. Nice to have you with us. And some form or another, next week I think it'll be live. That'll be great. Well, while we're thinking about this, Ham Nation will be at Dayton on Friday at 12:15 in Room 3. Most all of the hosts will be there, a lot of the net controllers, and we're really excited. Valerie will be with us this year. We're happy to add her to the mix, and we're going to be talking about how we put the show together, and it'll be a lot of fun on Friday at 12:15. Saturday, if you are not attending Dayton, at 2 o'clock we'll be on with Leo right here on the Twit Network with Leo when he does his tech guy. So we're very excited and honored to be able to be with Leo and talk to all of his audience on the networks. Gordo, that Friday thing, that 12:15, you'll be able to be there. It works well for your schedule, doesn't it?
It works great, and I look forward to seeing all of the Ham Nation viewers and listeners there. We'll see everybody there at Dayton.
Right. Well, we're looking forward to that whole week is always really great, and it's really the mecca of amateur radio. Amanda, you're not going to be there. I know. Have you been to Dayton yet, Amanda?
No, I have never been to Dayton, and I really, really look forward to the day that I get to go. Unfortunately, for you guys that don't know, I'm a printer, and it's always graduation over Dayton, so I never get to make it because it's one of our busiest times of the year. But
I understand.
I have some other comments, Bob, for you if you'd like to hear.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Great. First off, I think we all forgot that this week is National Emergency Dispatchers Week. So thank you to all the dispatchers out there. We appreciate all the work you do. And I know from working with some of them, you guys do a great job and you're mostly unheard and unspoken about. So kudos there. And Bob, I just want to let you know, so many people in the chat room are saying how much they hope you recover very well and very fast from your shoulder surgery there. So that's what I've got you guys for the end of the show there. Thanks so much for having me on tonight.
Well, thank you. Thanks for being here. And you'll be with us each week to handle the chat room and other things that you come up with. And we're always excited about that because I know you and Jeff are very involved in the emergency networks. And we'll have a lot more on that also. So as we expand this program, why we're very lucky to have all these great people. And one thing that we should tell everybody, Gordo, is if they're going to Dayton, they can help us. Dale is taking a list of volunteers to man the booth. Is that correct?
That is correct. And yes, we need booth representatives of Ham Nation because we have so many folks that said, I've heard about it. Tell me more about it. So if you're coming to Dayton, you want to spend an hour in our Ham Nation booth, we'd love to have you.
Right. So send a note to Dale as he's taking all of the names and doing his schedule. And Dale will be back next week. As we said at the beginning of the show, we have more segments, more people involved now and enabled to do that and not keep Brian from going out and creating a Harry Carey on himself, switching the TriCaster and the Skype around so many times. Why, we'll do these every other week. And some of them will be every week, but some of them will be every other week. So you'll see some of us here each week, some we won't. So just so you understand what we're doing here, nobody's going to be missed, that's for sure. We're very excited about this new lineup, and I'm very, very happy to see Val here tonight. She's going to be a great asset to it because I know personally I'm going to learn a lot. No, I'm not a contester. No, I'm not. I don't go on de-expeditions, but I respect them, and I'd like to know more about what it takes because it takes a lot to be a serious contester, and they get a lot from the hobby. So that's one of the things I look forward to with the new stuff. And Randy's going to be joining us, K7AGE. We're very, very happy to have Randy come along, and he'll be helping George, of course, with things that we build and things that we tear apart and things we make work and not work and all that. Randy's really great with his videos. So stay tuned. Tell all your buddies and your ham clubs and so on. They need to be here 8 o'clock Central Time, Central Daylight Time, on the Twit Network. We'll have some fun. After show nets, I know that 14267 will be live and well. What about 40 meters, Amanda? Will you be on 40 with Mike and Al?
Oh, absolutely. I'm totally looking forward to it. I think Dale will be joining us as well. So maybe 7268, look between 7268 and 7272.
Yeah, just move around a little bit because sometimes we have to adhere to what Val said. You know, got to listen and pay attention and be very, very cognizant of who's beside you. So they might have to move around a little bit. George, what do you got for D-Star? Where is all of that activity after the net?
Well, D-Star is always going to be on Reflector 14, Module C, and Echo Link is going to be at star, do drop in star, or node number 355-800. And I found a good use for this little diamond whip here. I'm going to use it to beat back Ray so I can take this radio from him.
Okay. Hey, Ray, good to see you, buddy. And it was good to see you at NAB. Yeah, it was good to see you and Cindy at NAB, and I hope everything's going to be okay in your life there, my friend. Hey, we'll see y'all next week, and I'll be back this weekend in the Ozarks and have some transmitters again and receivers again. 7-3, everybody. Bye-bye for now. It's K9EID.
Who's showing that? It's all about Ham Nation.